Dietrich spoke with those who had lost their homes. Felix and Ilse Ackermann only stared back dumbly. Everything they had salvaged from the ruin of their home they had wrapped into two small sacks, which Felix and his daughter Ulrike carried across their backs. The child Maria clutched a wooden doll, blackened and covered with a rag of scorched fabric. It looked like one of those African men that the Saracens sold at slave markets around the Mediterranean. Dietrich squatted beside Maria. "No worries, little one. You will stay with your Uncle Lorenz until the village can help your father build a new home."
"But who will make Anna better?"
Maria asked, holding the doll up. "I will take her to the church and see what I can do." He tried to take the doll gently from the girl's grasp, but found he had to pry her fingers away.
"All right there, you worthless sons of faithless wives. Back to the castle with you. Don't straggle there. You've had yourselves a break in the routine and a bath in the mill pond and high time, too. But there's still work wanting to be done."
Dietrich stepped aside and let the men-at-arms pass. "God bless you and your men, Sergeant Schweitzer," he said. The sergeant crossed himself.
"Good day to you, Pastor."
He gestured toward the castle with a toss of his head.
"Everard sent us down to help fight the fires."
Maximilian Schweitzer was a short, thick-shouldered man who in disposition reminded Dietrich of a tree stump. He had wandered down from the Alpine country a few years before to sell his sword, and Herr Manfred had hired him to take his foot soldiers in charge and act against outlaws in the high woods.
"Pastor, what,
The sergeant frowned suddenly and glared at his men.
"No one told you to listen. Do you need me to hold your hands? There's only one street through the village. The castle's at one end and you're at the other. Can you figure the rest out yourselves?"
Andreas the corporal bawled at them and they moved on in a rough line. Schweitzer watched them go.
They're good lads," he told Dietrich, "but they want for discipline."
He tugged at his leather jerkin to straighten it.
"Pastor, what happened today? All morning I felt like I knew there was an ambush laid for me, but not when or where. There was a fight in the guardroom, and young Hertel broke down in sobs in the common room for no reason at all. And when we laid hand to knife or helm, to anything metal, there would be a short stabbing pain that..."
"Were any hurt?"
"By such a small dart. Not in the body. But who knows what damage was done to the soul. Some of the lads from back up in the forest, they said it was elf shot."
"Elf shot?"
"Small arrows, invisible, fired by the elves." "What?"
"Well... the hypothesis saves the appearances, as Buridan requires, but you are multiplying entities without need."
Schweitzer scowled. "If that is mockery..."
"No, Sergeant, I was but recalling a friend of mine from Paris. He said that when we try to explain something occult, we should not suggest new entities to do so."
"Well, elves are not new entities,"
Schweitzer insisted.
"They've been around since the forest was young. Andreas comes from the Murg Valley, and he says it might have been the Nure playing tricks on us. And Franzel Longnose says it was the Usherman line out of Siegmund's woods."
"The Schwabian imagination is a wonderful thing," Dietrich said. "Sergeant, the supernatural lies always in small things, in a piece of bread, in a stranger's kindness. And the devil shows himself in mean and shabby dealings. All that shaking this morning and the booming wind and burst of light, all that was too dramatic. Only nature is so theatrical."
"But what caused it?"
"The causes are occult, but they're surely material."
"How can you be so..."
Max froze and stepped onto the wooden footbridge that spanned the stream below the mill, peering toward the woods. "What is it?" asked Dietrich. The sergeant tossed his head.
"That flock of acorn jays took sudden flight from the copse at the edge of the wood. Something's moving about in there."
Dietrich shaded his eyes and looked to where the Swiss had pointed. Smoke hung lazily in the air like streamers of teased wool. The trees at the edge of the wood cast dark shadows that the climbing sun failed to dispel. Within the motley of black and white, Dietrich spied movement, though at this distance he could make out no details. Light winked, as one sometimes sees when the sun glints off metal. Dietrich shaded his eyes. Is that armor?
Max scowled. In the Hare's Woods? That would be bold-faced even for von Falkenstein.
Would it? Falkenstein's ancestor sold his soul to the devil to escape a Saracen prison. He has despoiled nuns and holy pilgrims. He badly wants a reining in.
And the Markgraf grows irritated enough, Max agreed. But the gorge is too hard a passage. Why would Philip send his henchmen up here? Not for profit, surely.
Might von Scharfenstein? He gestured vaguely toward the southeast, where another robber baron had his nest.
Burg Scharfenstein's taken, hadn't you heard? Its lord seized a balsa merchant for ransom, and that proved his undoing. The man's nephew disguised himself as a notorious freelance they'd heard tale of, and went to them with word of easy spoils a little ways down the Weissen Valley. Well, greed dulls people's wits, so they followed him, and rode into an ambush laid by the Basler militia.
There's a lesson there.
Max grinned like a wolf. Do not vex the Swiss.
Dietrich studied the woods once more.
If not robber knights, then only landless men forced to poach in the forest. Maybe, Max allowed. But that's the Hare's lands.
What then? Will you go in and chase them off?
The Swiss shrugged. Or Everhart'll hire them for the grain harvest. Why hunt trouble? The Hare will be back in a few days. He's had his fill of France, or so the messenger said. I'll ask his will.
He stared a while longer at the woods.
There was a strange glow there before dawn. Then the smoke. I suppose you'll tell me that was nature, too.
He turned and left, touching his cap as he passed Hildegard Müller. Dietrich saw no more movement among the trees. Perhaps he had seen nothing earlier, only the swaying of saplings within the forest. 3. August, 1348. At Compline, the Vigil of St. Lawrence. Dispersit, said Dietrich. Dedit pauperibus, justitia ejus manet in saeculum saeculi, cornu ejus exultabitur in gloria. Joachim answered him, Beatus vir qui timet dominum, in mandatis ejus cupit nimis, gloria patri et filio, et spiritui sancti. Amen. That they said in unison, but with no echo from the church, save that of Theresia Gresh, who knelt solitary on the flagstones of the nave in the flickering candlelight. But Theresia was a fixture like the statues that lurked in the niches in the wall. There were only two sorts of women so perfervid in their devotions, mad women and saints. Nor were the two species entirely distinct. One must be a little mad to be a saint, at least as the world measured madness. Theresia had the soft round face of a maiden, though Dietrich knew her for 20. She had never, to Dietrich's certain knowledge, gone with a man, and indeed still spoke with simplicity and innocence. At times, Dietrich knew jealousy on her account, for the Lord had opened heaven to those who became as little children. From the oppression of the flame which surrounded me, Joachim read from the Book of Wisdom, and in the midst of the fire I was not burnt. Dietrich gave silent thanks for their deliverance from the fires 3 days before. Only Rudolf Pforzheimer had died. His aged heart had stopped when the electronic essence had been at its thickest. Dietrich shifted the book to the other side of the altar and read from the Gospel of Matthew, concluding, If any man will come after me, let him take what he has and give it to the poor. Joachim cried, Amen! Now, Theresia, he said, as he closed the book and she sat back on her heels to listen with a guileless smile. Only a few feasts possess a vigil night. Why is St. Lawrence among them? Theresia shook her head, which meant she did remember, but preferred that Dietrich tell her. A few days since, we remembered Pope Sixtus II, who was killed by the Romans while praying Mass in the catacombs. Sixtus had 7 deacons. 4 were killed at the Mass with him, and 2 others were hunted down and killed the same day. That is why we say Sixtus and his companions. Lawrence was the last of the deacons and eluded capture for several days.